Affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute. Mark. Affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 30 seconds. Mark.
Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
All righty. Coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, this is the Friday night. Well, you know, it's kind of a New Year's edition of Head On, isn't it? Well, fooey on that. It's artificial anyway. I've got a very dear friend down Atlanta way who says that New Year's is amateur night anyway. So, you know, I guess there's a sort of a human need to look backwards, look forward, have some sort of artificial marking point. I think, given the Northern Hemisphere weather, and we ought to make New Year's, March 1st. Let god-awful, miserable, detestable February, and I apologize to those of you with birthdays in February, let February be the end of the year. Because it really is. February is calendric nowhere land, isn't it? For sports fans, it's that dead zone when the NFL is over, baseball hasn't started yet, hockey's nothing to take seriously yet because the playoffs aren't underway, and all there is NBA. Endless bouts of NBA. And, I'm not an NBA fan, so... But you do, the only thing that pulls you through February for a sports fan, the only thing that even remotely gets you through February is the run-up to March Madness, because things start getting serious. Now, all that having been said, please have a safe and happy New Year. If you're going to go out and participate in amateur night, do so with a designated driver. If you're going to stay home, try to be with someone you love and someone who loves you, even if it's wife, husband, significant other, cat. Just try to be near somebody that you love and loves you. Because someone does, you know. And this is... Okay, this is not a self-help show. Stop it, Bob. From time to time on this show, I have mentioned things. Books, movies... that I have come to the conclusion have been viewed or read. I mean, come on, viewed. How much does a right winger actually read? My pet goat. But read by the wrong wing and taken for what they're not. I about came out of my shoes earlier today. There was a rerun of Ace Ventura. It wasn't the first Ace Ventura movie, was it, dear? It was the second Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. You know, not exactly cinematic gold, but I'm walking back to the studio when I hear Jim Carrey as Ace Ventura say, "And I am convinced that humans and animals can live in peace. And I suddenly realized one of the list of movies that Dear Leader has watched. I'm convinced that humans and fish can live together in peace. Remember that? They're openly stealing. So, along the same lines, I'm convinced that the wrong wing watched Dr. Strangelove and thought it was a cool thriller instead of a brilliantly dark comedy. They saw a Catch-22, maybe some of them read it, I don't know, and they thought that Milo Minderbinder's M&M Enterprises was a blueprint for streamlined military efficiency, if you will. Well, we've got another nominee today, and no, it's not Ace Ventura When Nature Calls. It comes with the latest wrong-wing talking points about our dear emperor and his domestic spying problem or program. Because, you see, there are more talking points out there for wing nuts and their supporters and their apologists. And the latest theory goes like this. Emperor Big Ears can't be bothered getting warrants or court orders for wiretaps because, get this, the NSA is listening to so many calls that they don't have the names and you can't get a warrant or a court order without a name. Well, that just makes sense. Of course. I mean, how are they going to get a warrant if somebody don't have a name for it? Now, of course, that's just a plain old-fashioned bald-faced lie, about the idea that you can't get put a name to a landline or a cell phone, or for that matter, that you can't get a warrant or a court order without a name. There are John Doe proceedings filed in courts all over this country every day. But it does tell you something. It tells you that the National Security Agency is using a wide net sweep and, I don't know, what would you call it? I'd call it mass batch processing. And they're looking for a sort of an almost Zen interconnectedness. Because either A, they're so damn dumb they think some tourist is going to say, yes, and I am bringing a bomb with me tomorrow on Flight 19. Or they're so thoroughly at sea, you know, with the fear and terror that they're not exactly sure what it means when the speaker on the other end of the line says, Aunt Mabel is bringing her special peanut brittle to the church social. You know, Agent Fred hears, Aunt Mabel is bringing her special peanut brittle to the church social, and he goes running from the room screaming, Save yourselves! We're doomed! Aunt Mabel's bringing her special peanut brittle to the church social! And he grabs some guy by the lapels, and his eyes are big and wide, and the pupils are dilated. And he's grabbing him by the lapels, and he's shaking him, and he's screaming again at him. Aunt Mabel's bringing her, don't you understand? Aunt Mabel's bringing her special peanut brittle to the church social. And he's got tears coming from his eyes, because, you see, poor Agent Fred, too. Poor Agent Fred has been terrorized by the Bolsheviks for lo these 5 long years of complete terror at all times. And now, 5 years in, Agent Fred doesn't know who to believe or what to trust. And of course, that all takes me back to my initial point. The other possibility is that in this, you know, big sweep of all of us, the NSA is so bumfuzzled that they think there might be long ciphers in otherwise unconnected communications. I mentioned the interconnectedness of all things sort of thingy. So that movie, the nominee for yet another movie that the Bolsheviks and the wrong-wingistas have seen and thoroughly and completely misunderstood, sort of like thinking that, Gone with the Wind is a movie about fashion. I mean, we're talking about that level of misunderstanding. Our next nominee for that flick, A Beautiful Mind. A Beautiful Mind with, Russell Crowe got an Academy Award out of it, I think. Remember Russell Crowe's character going completely off the reservation, insane, decon, huffing, crazy? Finding commie codes in Reader's Digest and Newsweek and Boy's Life and Highlights for Children, messages from the Communist Party. This is that. In one phone call, somebody says, in our previous example, peanut brittle. In another phone call by another person, a speaker says, ironing board. In a third phone call, somebody says, Poughkeepsie. And there you have it, peanut brittle, ironing board, Poughkeepsie. What that really means is that Ahmed is going to detonate a dirty bomb in downtown Dallas that he's bringing here on a tramp steamer from Kuala Lumpur on Groundhog Day. And Agent Fred has to go run screaming through the halls of the NSA again. We're screwed! The sad thing is, we are screwed. Because by spying on all of us, the NSA makes it a little more likely that some of us will die at some point because of their incompetence and their fear of the American people. At least that's the way I kind of look at it. Let's take a break. A reminder of the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
I can see by your eyes, you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Whatever was the song, what it was. Roll a girl, going
Welcome back. 19 and a half minutes after the hour. At least that's what it is here. Let's go to the phones. David is with us. Hey, David. You're head on. Happy New Year, I guess.
Well, good evening, Bob. So, in this new era of NSA awareness, if I were to say to you, Bob, if you ever choose to cook lamb in the springtime, I have a new combination of fruit wood that's delicious to put in the smoker. In the next few days, there's probably going to be a guy at the front door, right?
Agent Fred will have a conniption somewhere in the bowels of Fort Meade or wherever the hell it is the NSA hides out. Absolutely.
And if I were to say Chesapeake tidal charts and ammonium nitrate, you might not get to finish the show.
I think these guys have forsworn the obvious.
Well, it would seem that way. But anyway, I was just tagging on to what you were doing earlier.
Yeah, oyster beds.
Exactly. Oh
my God, oyster beds means anthrax.
Don't do it. Well, I must tell you, last night some things came up and I had to drop off for the third hour, so I didn't get to hear the conclusion of some of the most spectacular radio going. That was real life, real radio, real discourse. There were so many questions out there last night that nobody knew the answer to immediately. It played out literally in front of us, all of us that were able to listen. And I regret sincerely that I didn't hear the third hour. And I've got a little bit of an observation that I want to put out there.
Please.
If this was covered last night, you know, Bob, grab the big shepherd's book and just, you know, like, jerk me off. to kind of set the background, on the one hand, we had our good friend speaking about duty, honor, country, and it was pretty much follow the instructions and things will work out, and please have an understanding for the person that wants to see that child go to Penn State as opposed to Umadumma Community College. And more to my liking, there was Bob's position where we really need to become patriots. We've got to stand up. The majority of us could and should walk out of the building and say, look, this is not it. And then right in the middle, here's Ben. You know, out, and it didn't sound like he was speaking about an overpowering number, but we need one or two refuseniks to offer up the right amount of information at the right time, and it can matter to us. I mean, after all, Daniel Ellsberg, you know, showed us that recipe. Is that a pretty good assessment of what was going on?
Yeah, you get an A on that one, David.
And there's room in this show for all of that, and we can all, once we, like, pose a little, bristle a little, and all the rest of it, we can all be in the same room and leave as friends. And that's why last night was so startling. That's why it was so very important. And anybody that got to hear that was privileged. But there's one thing about all of that that struck me and struck me and struck me again. Our friend that was very interested in duty, honor, and country said at least twice, and I think three times, you should do your job and you should let the process work its way through because these things will be found out. They will be revealed.
Yeah.
This government under George Walker Bush, in my mind, is the least likely to let processes that were in place in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s reveal that to us. At this moment in this country's history, we have to have a Ben Burke refusing. We have to have 30 or 40 people out of 100 be a Bob Kincaid, not storm the barricades, but walk out the door of the barricade to proclaim that things are wrong. George Walker Bush and the people that support him, prop him up, move his mouth with their hand up his back, that crowd will not let the normal processes reveal the ugliness to us. There has to be somebody breaking the cycle of evil cover-up, evil lies that is grabbing our nation, and that's the one small area I disagree with our friend that spoke last night.
We are confronted by two problems in this whole process, and one is these people were looked at as some sort of masters of the universe, and they talked about themselves, about how they were going, you know, the PNAC crowd and what they were going to remake history. You remember that?
Oh, we don't.
They've turned out to be.
We make history. We don't study history. Yeah. We make history.
Yeah, they've turned out to be fools, David.
Of course they are, because they're running contrary to every good human instinct. We have to have somebody, when they do these horrible things, break out of the mold and, you know, find the phone and drop the dime. And it's proven today, this very day, what my concern is. Bush and his henchmen are now going to pursue and investigate and bedevil the leaker. They never denied a word of all of this. In fact, he's the first American president to gleefully, proudly confess in front of all of us, I have committed an impeachable offense that is treasonous in nature. I'm proud of it, and I'll do it again. Take it and like it, and don't expect a reach around, America.
Exactly. And the thing is, you talk about those revelatory processes, David. There were processes at work that were working when Bill Clinton left office.
Of course there were.
Within 2 days of George's arrival in office, you get the Hart-Rudman report on national airport security, and the conclusion that is reached in the executive summary is that we're in trouble. And that process was stopped in its tracks. You know, there was the CIA had a process in place by which they gave the best synthesis of and the NSA DIS, all of them, gave a synthesis of intelligence to the president on a daily basis. And on October 6th, you get this one called Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S. And that's the process at work. But the thing is, when it comes up against the gang that can't think straight, let alone shoot, everything falls apart.
Stupidity and dishonesty are the worst combination of evil behavior. And that's what we have. They don't study history. They refuse to be honest about what they do. I mean, even in a handshake conversation in the White House, Clinton says, hey, watch out for Al-Qaeda. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, whatever.
We need a tax cut.
Yeah, you're on the way out. I'm not. See ya.
And the next thing you know, we've got buildings falling down. You're absolutely right. David, we've got to hit the break, though.
Well, and I may not be able to listen tonight, Bob. We've got some really OG thunderstorms going through.
I don't need to hear that, because if they're there now, they'll be here at some other point, and my terrified Chihuahua telecommunication system will head under the bed again.
Oh, no, please don't let the cute little brown thing go, you know, into its teacup. But good luck.
Thanks, David. Take care, and Happy New Year.
Thanks for the chance to talk.
All right. My pleasure.
See
you, Bob. A quick break, and we'll come back, take some more of your calls if you wish. The number 4877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
If it was up to me, I'd just let that song play because it's one of my favorites. But, you know, the lovely Agnes is in control of that part of the program. So, you know, I think after the show I'm going to have to sit down and listen to Thunder Road. That's about 27 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On a Friday night. The last show of the year in the artificial terms by which we measure our years. And you heard just now the promo for Bruce Birch's All Things Reconsidered. A reminder, a program note, if you will. There's going to be a special live All Things Reconsidered tonight, starting at 10. By all means, after you're done here, run over to Bruce's site, which is allthingsreconsidered.org/listenlive.htm. Got all that? Good. And enjoy a very special live Friday night edition of Bruce's commentary. And he does a wonderful job at it. And, of course, Saturday night, 4th Estate Radio, 10 o'clock. And go there for further information. An email that I had just received from our good friend Peter in Tallahassee. He says, the caller Jack from last night, Jack did generate some controversy, didn't he? Was saying that he had listened to the shows on previous nights and that the general drift was that there were idiots in Congress and an idiot in the White House. From this, Peter says, he was saying, come on, what does that say about the majority that elected them, as if there was something wrong with just coming out and saying, yes, the people who voted them in are idiots. I caught a desperation in his voice that said he completely got the fact that the majority of idiots vote Republican. Seems to me that his problem was that he could not handle that simple fact being voiced. Peter says, God, how I hate those GD imbeciles, Jack included. Oh, we're not making friends here, Peter. Well said, well said. To the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. I hear you 5 by 5. You?
You're doing great.
Good. Two things. First, you know, the people in this administration as I said last night, will eventually go the way of the dodo. I mean, if you look back at Roman history, who would have thought at the height of the excesses of the Julio-Claudian family that ruled Rome, that produced emperors like Nero and Caligula, mm-hmm. that within 200 or 300 years, the very people whom they drove into the catacombs and into the Colosseum would be ruling their empire, and Christianity would be the main religion of that empire. Who would have thought it? You know, time is just amazing on how quickly things change. And these people are not going to be around forever, and they will have their reward. And the second thing I want to say is this. In the 2005, we lost a lot of good people this year. And
we
I
did
would
indeed.
Like to remember a few of them, and I'll name a few if I may, please.
Go right ahead.
The Pope, John Paul II, Shirley Chisholm, Rosa Parks, the lovely Anne Bancroft,
yes,
Shirley Horn, Richard Pryor, Hunter Thompson.
Yeah, that's the one that struck me.
Johnny Carson and Eugene McCarthy. The first man who really, in my life, at the age of 22 or 23, broke me out of lockstep into which I had been driven for the first formative years of my life.
You mean Eugene, by that you mean Eugene McCarthy?
Exactly, yeah. In 1968.
And, you know, we lost one in the last week or so that went by largely unnoticed that I think deserved more notice than he got, William Proxmire.
Right, absolutely. And he used to have the Golden Fleece Award for things that were wrong.
We could certainly use him.
Yes, we could. But I do believe, and I have faith in a higher power that will eventually help us correct these wrongs, because we can't do any of this by ourselves. I mean, I'm sorry. I believe that, and I believe that that the good Lord will certainly help us in our hours of need. And I believe that he is quite unhappy with some of the things that have been going on, particularly some of the things that have been said in his name.
Well, the sad thing is, Jim, the higher power, the Almighty, whatever one might call him, works on a time scope that is foreign to us, shall
well,
we say.
Well,
and I freely admit, I get frustrated with how long it takes for him to act, or
well,
it, or
you know,
she.
I can't question his timetable, and I can't question him. And, you know, that's something that's way above my pay grade.
So,
but I do believe that, you know, as I've said before, my faith in him is a leap into the unknown. And every day that we have, into which we enter on upon awakening, in itself is a leap into the unknown. And, you know, we just do the very best we can. We make concerted efforts to see that our points are you know, made. And I think that the dialogue that is being created and listened to on this show has begun to spread. And, you know, from the spark, and I've said this before when you were at WWNNR, whatever it's called, from mm-hmm. the spark shall come the flame.
Well, I think last night showed that we can get a pretty good blaze going, but that's small potatoes compared to what's eventually going to happen with this program.
Well, yeah.
And as far as activism is concerned, I was being a little facetious about being frustrated with God at the speed with which he operates. But, you know, waiting for God to do his will does not necessarily preclude those of us who are here now from busting our collective tookus.
Well, that's what
to,
I meant.
To help things along.
The Lord helps
bit.
Those who help themselves, that's for sure.
So Ben Franklin said.
And so, well, and, you know, he, and his faith was kind of strange, but anyway, to me, I mean, not strange, but he was a deist.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, like I say, I mean, even during the brief gaudy hour of this current administration, I mean...
Well, what terrifies me, Jim...
It will just amaze you to see how these people will be cast down.
What scares me though, Jim, is during that brief gaudy hour, and that's exactly what they're having here. This is their moment in the sun before they're shunted back into the dark places from which they arose. During that brief gaudy hour, their capacity for doing harm has shown itself to be humongous.
Well,
and as such, what scares the dickens out of me is wondering what it is they've missed. I mean, we know that Al-Qaeda did everything except put up a great big neon sign on top of the World Trade Center saying, you know, hit it here. And they missed every last bit of it. What else have they missed?
Well, I know this, and we've talked about this before. But, you know, as I said last night, wherever there is greatness, particularly in organizations that are made up of men, you have the capacity, unfortunately, for great error. And history has to correct that error.
And it was Dean Swift, was it not, who said, you will know a great man by these portents, that wherever he goes, he is surrounded by a confederacy of dunces?
I think it was he, I'm not sure. But, I mean, the confederacy of dunces is, there was a book, there was something written by another author.
Yeah, John Kennedy Toole, and that was the epigraph that he from which he took his title.
Yeah, and there was also Grizzard, who was an editor in a paper in the South.
Yeah, Lewis.
Right. But anyway, like I say, I mean, be patient. Be patient, George Bush. Be patient, Mr. Cheney. We're coming. Be patient. We'll be there.
You know that?
Be patient.
I think that's the thing that scares them most. The whole hosts of skinny, bearded, screeching, wailing Arab terrorists do not terrify that bunch. And that's the sad thing, Jim. They're not nearly as terrified by them as they are by their fellow Americans.
Well, that's my point, exactly, because it's just going to be like, you know, when, you know, Nero pulled the trick about Rome being burned by the Christians, and then they found out he did it. And, you know, I'll never forget in that movie, Quo Vadis, how Peter Ustinov, who played Nero so well, and you saw what happened to him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, it was his own denouement, his own end. The same with Caligula and the same with these other people. And the people who have committed these excesses during this administration, in my opinion, my humble opinion, which I submit to you, will be reviled and reviewed in the same light as some of the more excessive Julio-Claudian emperors of the age of Rome.
Well, we may. I'd like to see that end for them, but
it will happen. It will. I can assure you. Have faith, my friend. Have faith.
I'm going to have a little faith, but always remember that faith without works is dead. So we'll do a little working along the way too.
Well, I think you are making your efforts there.
All right, thanks, Jim.
And so am I in my own way. So anyway, so a happy new year to you and your family, and good luck with your program during the following months to come. And
We're going to keep setting them up and knocking them down. Thanks so much, Jim, and a very happy new year from all of us.
So good night and good luck.
Take care. All right, let's see. Let's go ahead and take our break. Come back, a little email, phone calls if you want. God knows it's not like there's nothing to talk about. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before before they pile up in the sink and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding. Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
Little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Like where I've ended up or where I've begun. I always feel I must get things in the can. I just can't handle it the way I am. Why am I so straight and simple? People see through me like I'm made of glass. Why can't I deepen with graying temples? Am I growing out of my class?
Welcome back. 13 minutes before the hour, and a program note on this end as well. There will be no live show Monday, and I want you to know I feel profoundly guilty about it. We will rerun another show. I'm not going to pull your leg and say, you know, best of. Someday there will be a best of, and we'll mix it down, and it'll be all the wonderful little bits and pieces of... But we're just going to run a rerun on Monday. I'm sorry, but I have my reasons. And for those of you who know how very much I love my alma mater, the reason is I'm going to be sitting on a blanket in the living, sitting on the couch on the in the living room with a blanket over my head, peeping through my fingers at the Sugar Bowl as my beloved Mountaineers take on the Georgia Bulldogs. I know I am a person of little faith, but I'm scared to death that they're going to have to install a third digit on the scoreboard for Georgia, just in case they go into three-digit scoring on it. And I know, I'm sorry, but I come by my cynicism honestly. I've had my heart broken in more Mountaineer by more Mountaineer bowl games than I can count. Going back to the eight game losing streak of that old coal whore Don Nealon. Yeah. So, but anyway, that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to watch some football. So I apologize, but we'll be back on Tuesday, rocking and rolling, raising a ruckus. An email from our pal Sue on Big Coal River. Several people, stupid Republicans, I'm sure, have called into the Reader's Voice in the Charleston Gazette saying if we don't have anything to hide, we shouldn't care if the government spies on us. And, you know, we've heard that. That's been said a million times around the country as well. I wonder how they would feel, even if they had nothing to hide and someone broke into their home and riffled through their drawers, closets, and cabinets. What if they didn't actually take anything, just look through things? Wouldn't they feel violated? Or would it be okay because they didn't have anything to hide? I can hear them screaming now. I don't have anything to hide, but I don't like the idea of the Bush administration spying on me. Oh, yeah, they'd scream, Sue. Sue, they would scream like you can't imagine. Do you remember Travelgate? Do you remember all the business about Hillary and her secret FBI files and her enemies list? You remember that hateful video that filthy pig Falwell sold to the Clinton Chronicles, accusing them of murder? After murder, after murder, after murder? Oh, they didn't like that at all. And drove around with bumper stickers on their rusting pickup trucks that said, I love my country, but I fear my government. Yeah, if the shoe was on the other foot, they wouldn't like it so much. The sad thing is they don't understand that the shoe is on the other foot. The shoe's on all of our feet. We are all being spied on. You know, the Dear Emperor administration has sent out its little hacks and shills to say, this is about terrorism. This is not about spying on the American people. Bug spray. Until we know exactly what they have done with their warrantless searches, it is about all of us. Because when the rights of one innocent American are diminished, all of our rights are diminished. We're largely at this point in time because the Fourth Amendment has been whittled away over the last 50 years to the point that it's almost meaningless now. Truly. Truly. So thank you, Sue. I appreciate your comments. And the funny thing is, it's when you go rifling through the cupboards and drawers and closets of the Republican right, that's when you really find the good stuff. This past year, maybe back last April, he was a Republican operative. He was the one who was responsible for dirtying up the name liberal. He was responsible for a whole bunch of these protection of marriage amendments. And then, you know, bona fide, true, blue, upstanding, good, godly Republican strategist, and ran off to Massachusetts and married his boyfriend. And I say good for him. Absolutely good for him. Because we either, and then this goes to the Fourth Amendment, the First, the Second, the Third, all of them. Either all Americans have all the rights contained in the Constitution, or none of us do. Look how easy it was for that god-awful little monster from Colorado, Tom Tancredo. This guy went on the radio earlier this year. See, I didn't want to do a countdown show, but, you know, let's do think back a little bit. What the hell? He went on the radio earlier this year, Tom Tancredo, and said, what we need to do is to explain to the Muslims that if a dirty bomb ever goes off in the United States, we will drop a nuclear device right on top of Mecca. And now it is his idea that will be debated in the coming year in the House of Representatives. It is his idea to declare that little bitty babies, newborns in this country, will no longer have accorded to them the right of citizenship. The very thing that brought this nation to prominence and to greatness, our ability to draw on other nations' talent, and other nations' citizenry's yearning to be free and to be part of the American dream. Tom Tancredo says no. No, not anymore, because there are certain good babies that are born that have a right to life, of course, and there are babies that are bad babies. Is there any among us on the progressive liberal side that thinks that there's such a thing as a bad newborn? A bad newborn. Now you look at them, and to be quite honest, you know, they're kind of small and wrinkly, and their heads are a little out of shape given the trip that they've just made. But it comes back in, and they've got their little pinched up faces. You ever notice that little newborn babies look like really, really old people? It's kind of a circle, isn't it? But can you look at a newborn and not just swell with love and hope for the world that that person, that little tiny person, will grow up in? And hope and pray and be willing to work to give them a decent shot at life? Is there anybody on our side of the debate that can not do that? Shh, newsflash. The other side of the debate, the hateful side, the ugly side, the mean, pig-eyed, stupid side of this debate looks at little babies if they happen to not be white enough, sunshine, and say, that is a bad baby, and that baby does not deserve to be called American. They want to create an entire generation of newborns that are persons without a country. Think about that a little bit. Think about the Illegal Immigration Act of 2005 that we talked about last night that will make felons out of church workers who want to help people no matter their circumstance. Do you understand that if an illegal immigrant is having a baby in a taxi cab and the cab driver helps deliver the baby, that cab driver, under the Illegal Immigration Act of 2005, that cab driver is a felon because they helped birth an illegal baby? That is the face of republicanism, and that is the future they want to take us to. See it now. Fight them tomorrow. Make a New Year's resolution and keep this one, that you will no longer stand silent to evil such as what Tom Tancredo and his filthy Republican pals throw out there for the masses of America. Promise it to yourself. Promise it to the future. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
Oh.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
Can you hear the sound of It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Coming up on 6 minutes after the hour. An email in from after my little rant about that darling of the right, Tom Tancredo, congressman from Colorado. Our good friend Eleni, who lives in Colorado, writes in and says that Tom Tancredo would have an absolute fit if an illegal immigrant wanted to have an abortion. But the minute the baby was born, he'd drop kick it back to Tijuana. See, and Eleni is right, of course. She's correct. Let's use that word. Let's use correct. Let's quit saying that people are right. They're correct. It's much more precise language. Eleni is correct. And that's one of the things that makes me think I could never, you know, even if I was paid to go on the air and, I know, it just makes you want to take a shower. If I was paid to go on the air and pretend I was a right-winger, I couldn't do it. Because my head would just bang, explode. Because on the one hand, you have to be pro-life, but on the other, you got to jump out there and say that not all babies born are American babies. Not all babies born deserve the chance at the American dream. You've got to be. You cannot be a member of the Republican Party without being an abject, unmitigated, pure and simple hypocrite. And I say hypocrite because there are other words that I'd like to use that I just can't. Hypocrites? Here's a hypocrite. Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Cleveland, Tennessee, April 2005.
All right, Mr. Peabody.
Dateline Nashville. A state senator sponsoring a constitutional amendment in Tennessee aimed at solemnizing the relationship of one man and one woman is accused in a divorce case of cheating on his wife. State Senator Jeff Miller, a Republican from Cleveland, Tennessee, is accused of inappropriate marital conduct in a divorce complaint filed February 25th in Bradley County, Tennessee. The senator's March 2nd answer to the complaint vehemently denies any inappropriate marital conduct. The senator's wife, they were married for 15 years, Jeff and Bridget Suzanne Miller. They were married for 15 years, and his wife says, well, you know, he's very hypocritical, fighting for the sanctity of marriage and not keeping his own. She said in a report in the Chattanooga Times Free Press. The senator's wife said Wednesday, remember this is April 2005, the senator's wife said Wednesday that her husband was involved with a woman in Nashville. She said family members saw him with the woman at a Martina McBride concert. He told them that she was just a friend. That really bothered me, said Mrs. Miller. And we're not talking about the Mrs. Miller who sings These Boots Are Made for Walking, It's Been a Hard Day's Night or Downtown. No, this is Bridget Suzanne Miller. The state Senate approved Jeff Miller's marriage protection amendment. God, I love these people. The comedy alone is priceless. February 22nd, in addition to defining marriage as the historical, institutional, and legal contract solemnizing the relationship of one man and one woman, it also forbids state recognition of same-sex marriage. Yeah, by the way, the Republican that invented evil liberals and all that other Republican bigotry gave voice to it, Finkelstein. I think his first name was Arthur Finkelstein. Now, Miller introduced this hateful little bit of business in Tennessee, and some wiseacre along the way, who apparently, what do I know, was also at the Martina McBride concert, tried to amend the amendment with a constitutional ban on adultery. Miller stopped that in its tracks. All right, fun time's over. What do you mean trying to make adultery, ban adultery in my one man, one woman marriage amendment? Don't you understand this ain't a marriage about marriage at all? It's about the fact that I'm a damn bigot. It's not politically correct for me to hate the dark-skinned people anymore, so I can't get away with that. But at least you can let me hate the gays, for God's sakes. Really, for God's sakes. It says so in Leviticus. Right up there next to not wearing apparel what's woven of more than one different kind of cloth, nor thou shalt not eat no coconut fried shrimp at the Outback. It's right there. Thou shalt not be a homo. For God's sakes. So let's have no more talk about this business of banning adultery. Oh, Lord, you can just... I wish I was a little bit better contemporary country music fan, because I would have a ballad going in the background right now by Martina McBride. Can't you just... It's... Dear God, it's Tennessee. Everybody who was anybody was at the Martina McBride concert. His own family was there, and they saw him canoodling with that woman. I'm sorry, David. I know. Oh, yeah, this one's for the girls. Yeah, Agnes is dancing now. Yeah, Martina McBride. Yeah, I get it now. He was probably just a dancing. She was a dancing away. And he was a happy little right-wing camper. Yes, dear.
He was past happy. Okay.
He was blissing.
He was watching her jump up and down to Martina McBride. And evidently, the 1-900 spank me didn't work.
No, that's www.spankmeivebeennaughty.com.
No, they don't want their internet followed, so they'll start using those cell phones now.
Right. But so that's Jeff Miller. That's Jeff Miller. Well, it's updated. And, of course, I mean, you know how the story plays out. You've probably seen these little publications, you know, the Value Shopper, the Bargain Hunter, the Penny Saver. Little small-town newspapers will put them out as an advertising circular adjunct to their regular publications, and you get it for free. And it's all full of, you know, we'll sell or swap for a hide to bed and $45, call 14023 and ask for Bob, you know, that kind of thing. I have an aging mule that I would like to trade for a bass boat with very few leaks, that kind of thing. If you don't live in the South or you don't live in a rural area, you might not get it, but it's a staple of our culture. The stop and swap, the swap meet, that kind of thing. And as a consequence, you know, and they'll being journalists, they'll throw in a little news story here, a little sports item there. You know, congratulations to the our high school Flying Comets on going to the sectionals in basket weaving, that kind of thing. Well, there is in Cleveland, Tennessee, an outfit called the Bradley News Weekly. And the Bradley News Weekly has shown more cojones than any other newspaper in Tennessee. Because now bear in mind, this guy is the Tennessee Senate Republican leader or some such. This Jeff Miller, this cretinous, can't keep his fly zipped, filthy little hypocritical Republican. Nobody else in Tennessee will criticize him, but the little bitty Bradley News Weekly came out and drilled him to the wall. And as a consequence, good, godly, upstanding, Christian, family values, Jeff Miller is running around threatening the advertisers of the Bradley News Weekly, telling them they'd best not advertise in that paper because it reported that he's dating a woman while he's waiting for his divorce to come through. And, he sent the warning letter out on December the 13th. He wrote, "Myself and many others are going to be watching in the next several weeks to identify and remember those in this community that wish to subsidize the destructive nature of this type of publication in our community." You understand how they work? If they can't win in the battle of ideas, they try to shut the other side down. This, you've seen it a million times if you've seen it once. Liberal and progressive, or, you know, anybody that, never mind that, anybody that dares to declare that the emperor is running around butt naked. And again, that's a southern thing. There's a difference between naked, N-A-K-E-D, and naked, N-E-K-K-I-D. Naked is the state of having no clothing on. Naked is having no clothing on and being up to something bad. So, yeah, anybody who dares to say that the emperor is running around buck naked gets a letter threatening advertisers. Do you understand how punkish, how thuggish this is? I best not catch you advertising in that Bradley News Weekly. We's a watching you.
Does he have one of those cute little hoods to go over his head too?
Oh, I'm sure he does. It's just like something out of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, it is. I'd have it plastered, you know, come next election day. I'd make flyers and take them out and put them on the cars.
Well, in an interview, Miller didn't, you know, that's the thing. You know, this is just like the Dan, we talked about this last night. This is just like the Dan Rather thing with CBS. The Bush administration never, ever, 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 ever refuted the stuff that was contained in the documents that said that he was a no-good, draft-dodging, dirt-eating weasel. Never refuted any of that. They just, you know, them documents was forged. They wasn't signed with the proper ink. It is clear to us that this was produced on a word processor and not an IBM Selectric 2 like they claim. This is that.
Miller did not dispute the newspaper's report about his girlfriend, but said he and his wife are working toward a divorce settlement and his personal life should be left just that.
Really? Screw you, Jeff Miller. Honest to God, screw you, buddy. I hope somebody sends you a transcript or a recording of this segment of the program, because I want to personally say that you can go to hell, Jeff Miller.
Head on, topic.
You honestly can. The nerve of you.
It's a matter of my personal life, and it should be left just that way.
How about the personal lives of the people that you don't like how they have sex? How about the personal lives of the people that you question their commitment to one another just because of what goes on when the lights go off? The hell with you, Jeff Miller. Oh, my God.
Well, what about the spying that's going on now? Now, it's okay to leave him alone in his personal life.
His personal life should be left just that. That's absolutely correct.
Well, now, wait. I thought that this was sharing time between us and the Republicans.
Huh?
You know, sharing. Because they're, you know, doing this, spying on America.
That looks like a cigarette in your hands, honey.
Cute, Bob. No, I mean, they're saying that everything they're doing is legal and it's for our protection, but yet he wants everything in his personal life left alone.
Yeah, right. Well, see, the beauty of this is unlike, say, you know, how much do you make when you're editor of the New York Times? Bill Keller, is that his name? And he sat on his hands even though he knew that George Bush was spying on America because he was scared to death of the Bush administration. Meanwhile, the editor of the Bradley News Weekly has more guts than any other editor in America right now. The editor of the Bradley News Weekly, after hearing Jeff Miller complain that his personal life should be left just that, they shot back and they said, "Hey, Buster, your platform is that of a guy who believes in the sanctity of marriage and that marriage should be between one man and one woman, and your behavior doesn't support your platform, so we report it." And they also called Miller an irresponsible little boy who would, quote, rather be spending time with his lover than tending to official duties. So then Miller goes around and starts threatening the business's advertisers, and he says, I love it when the Republicans cry. Dear God, I love it when they weep and they moan and they sound so put upon. You know, just like the thousands upon thousands of erstwhile religion industry so-called Christians going in church. We're being persecuted. Oh, God, we're being persecuted. You know, never mind that they claim that they're 80% of the American population. But them 20%, they're just wearing us out. Dear Jesus. So Miller does the same thing.
Well, I had to threaten them businesses. It's the only way I can fight back. I can't go to press every week.
Oh, dear me, dear me, dear me. You know, there's a lesson, and there ought to be like little politician boot camp. Because there's a lesson to be learned in all of this, and I have a feeling Tennessee State Senator Jeff Miller is about to learn it. And the lesson is this. There's lesson one and lesson two. Lesson one is called the first law of holes. When you're in one over your head, quit digging. Lesson two is never start a war with a man who buys ink by the barrel. I hope this plays out. I hope the Bradley Week News Weekly, the Johnson City Moral Volcano and Morning Glory Thunder, I hope the Bradley News Weekly wears Jeff out. Jeff Miller, remember him? He'll be fading from the political landscape fairly soon, and crawling back under some rock or. Well, no. Maybe he'll just go on tour and follow Martina McBride and sell cheese sandwiches and hacky sacks in the parking lot. Good luck, Jeff Miller. And by the way, if the Bradley News Weekly happens to sue you, and you're a lawyer because you're representing yourself in your own divorce, if the Bradley News Weekly happens to sue you for tortious interference with business relations, buddy, I'd just confess judgment because you put it in print. Let's go to the phones. Jim's back with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Now, listen, catch me up here. I had to take a shower. Now, who is this guy? What is he up to?
No, Jeff Miller. He's an upstanding, moral, good, godly Republican leader of the Tennessee State Senate, author of their Defense of Marriage Amendment, and he kind of got caught canoodling at a Martina McBride concert.
With her?
With somebody. Not with Martina, but with somebody, some woman, not his wife.
Well, you know, the only thing I can say to that type of behavior is by their fruits you shall know them. And you know, these people eventually, if they can try to put on one front, but eventually their true identities will be discovered. Their sins will find them out.
Well, they've found Jeff Miller out.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you have so many people who will pose and strike postures as being one thing when they are entirely something else. And what I hate about this is to see there are a lot of God-fearing Christian people, religious people, who are not like this. And unfortunately, because of any number of reasons, they have been taken in. And that hurts my heart greatly. It really does.
Well, I don't think the real Christians have been taken in, Jim.
Well, I think people can be persuaded by a number of things. I mean, when you start talking about same-sex marriages and you start talking about certain things, you know, you're going to push certain buttons among conservative, right-wing Christians. There's no question. The evangelicals.
Right, but those people, Jim, aren't Christians. The right-wing evangelicals, the people that follow the Falwells and the Dobsons and the Kennedys and the Robertsons, those people aren't Christians, and I think that we will be better off as soon as we figure out that they aren't and we stop calling them such.
Well, I agree with you there. I do. But, I mean, there are a lot of good people who are not as intolerant and not as, you know, doctrinaire.
Right, but they're not going. But those people are not going to the first Pentecostal Baptist Temple of Holiness and Herpetological Seminary.
Well, you know, it's just a strange thing. There seems to be some type of great awakening in this country, or some type of spiritual awakening among the evangelicals, particularly in the past, 20 years?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, since 1990, that I was reading or seeing something on television about this mega church of 30,000 people, and there are a number of those institutions, and some of them may be good, and some of them may be bad.
But for the life of me, you know, I can't figure out why one would ever attend a so-called mega church. It has to be some sort of cult of personality, because if you're looking for a personal relationship with some sort of deity or higher power, you're not going to find it sitting in a football arena.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you know, basically cults of personality are not just related to religion. I mean, you can have that related to politics. I mean, look at the cult of personality that surrounded Stalin in Russia.
Exactly. Or Mao.
Or Chairman Mao in China. And to a certain extent, Adolf Hitler in Germany. That was the type of personality cult.
Or, look, let's face it, it's a cult of personality, what we've got with the people who are still following George Bush. They're not following him for his intellect. They're not following for his sound fiscal policies. They're not following him because he's a brilliant war leader. That leaves nothing but cult of personality, does it?
Well, and these things, as history has taught us, you know, even Khrushchev, when he debunked Stalin in his secret speech of February 22nd, 1956, decried the cult of personality and the evils that came from it, you know? And to hear this coming from the voice of one of Stalin's lieutenants, well, I mean, that was pretty remarkable, you know?
Yeah.
I was only 10 years old when he made that speech, but I mean, I can still remember my parents talking about it when it was made public, you know? And
that tells me that you had a pretty incredible set of parents, Jim. And I mean that in all honor.
Well, thank you. God bless you for that. You're absolutely right. And you know, and of course, I lived in a household where, of course, World War II was in fact a household word because they all had gone and fought. And you know, my mother had participated in the various drives, you know, mm-hmm. and the number of blankets she collected to send to the Soviet Army, and, you know, the things like that.
Yeah, we forget that those kind of drives took place, that the Soviets, you know, were considered allies of ours in the fight. There were, you know, bandage rolling, blanket drives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Spam. My God, the Red Army lived on spam for I don't know how long until they could, you know, they probably were living on it back after the war.
Well, frankly, it probably explains a little bit about the shortened Soviet lifespan, doesn't it?
I guess so. But I'm just saying, you know, there are a lot of, in history, these cults of personality, they seem to have their lifespan and then they go away. And, you know, they're gone.
Well, T.E. Lawrence described something similar when he was describing the Wahhabis in his Seven Pillars of Wisdom. He said, they dash themselves upon the rocks of civilization. The only problem
right.
is, in the interim, there's a lot of us who pay the price for their ignorance and their hatred. And that applies to Wahhabist Muslims and applies equally to fundamentalist and religion industry erstwhile proto-Christians. Hey, Jim, we got to hit the break. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care. And time for our Cup of Joe report. I always look forward to that. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Well, 2005 is coming to an end. It's been, to say the least, an interesting year. But rather than use 2005's last report to talk about what happened over the past year, I'm going to take the progressive approach and talk about the future. And as anyone who's a regular listener knows, that means good news and bad news. The good news is that little by little, people are waking up to what's been going on in our government. While there is still a core group of people who belong to the cult of personality that the Republican Party has become, the people who have been more or less on the fence have started to pay a little more attention to what's going on. As Paul Krugman of the New York Times recently pointed out, the current administration has proven to be less powerful than we've been led to believe. A year ago, for example, we were predicting the end of Social Security. I predict that this trend towards progressivism will continue. The bad news is that despite some setbacks, the Republican machine is still very powerful and is not going to give up without a fight. I predict that through a combination of gerrymandering and electoral fraud, the Republicans will maintain control of Congress in the elections of 2006. But their margin will still be small enough so that if Democrats remain aggressive, they can prevent the worst aspects of their policies until such time as the population rises against them, perhaps in 2008. All in all, I believe that things will get better, but not before things get worse. Sometimes we have to reach bottom before we can start climbing up. Have a happy new year, everyone. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Like this, way out in West Texas, Galveston Bay is a whole other world. My wife's in our room getting over her sunburn. How would Louis L'Amour get me next to that girl? She tells me her tan is the same way all over. She asked me to dance and said, keep your boots on. She never met a number one cowboy. And the bed is all empty, except for a note left from some guy named Dan. My head got all light and the room started spinning. I stepped outside just to get some fresh air. Out on a wave was my own darling Lola and some pretty boy with bleach in his hair. Who's the blonde stranger out there with my wife? What were they doing in the moonlight? This side of Texas is all new to me. Who are these strangers live by the sea? Back on the ranch, everything's normal. Beach blanket bingo comes on the TV. We talk in our sleep, and then the next morning I ask her who's Dan, and she says, who's Marie? Who's the blonde stranger who entered my life, making
Welcome back. Quick email in regard to right-wing Republican, upstanding, God-fearing, romping State Senator Jeff Walker from our pal David in Tennessee. No problem, Bob, because, you know, I tendered an apology. He says, round here, Bob, hits who ate at the mountain, at the Martiner McBride shoe that runs in a short list in the paper. Them so-and-so county shopper kind of papers are very popular at the steam and cream rub room chain. Massage therapy is very popular here. Oh, God, this is so much fun. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm having a blast.
Yeah, you sound like, oh, that's good. That's what this is all about. I got a question about the bad baby scenario.
Yeah.
Can that be applied retroactively?
To Tom Tancredo, maybe.
Huh?
Yeah, you kind of.
You know, I might consider if they give us, you know, I might consider consider that if we could do retroactive.
Yeah, well, you better. Yeah, but you crazy Serb, you better watch out or you'll be on a boat.
I just don't want to, you know, you can't be a citizen, that's all. I wouldn't hurt nobody.
Well, you know, but, you know, somehow.
I'm a guy without no guns, remember?
Yeah, well, that's true. But somehow or another, I get the idea that even though you don't get to be a citizen, you probably under, you know, if you're poor or middle class in Republic world, I'm guessing even if you're not a citizen, you still get to pay taxes.
Oh, we wouldn't take that away from you.
Well, that'd be un-American, wouldn't it?
Jeez. You know, I've been thinking about this. the spying thing and how, you know, some people don't seem to be that upset about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, I know how to get the chamber and stuff on our side, the business people.
Yeah.
I mean, with the access that these people have and the access that they sell, I mean, everything's for sale.
Sure.
You know, how would you like to listen to your main competitor's e-board meeting or conference call with their best client in Germany or Japan or...
Oh yeah,
you know
that's
what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's going to go over real well.
Well, exactly, but these people are capable of that.
Well, of course they are.
You know, how do you think Abramoff got in so much? Yeah, I mean, anything's for sale.
Sure, it is.
And like I said, you think, how about Tom DeLay? And do you think about all the political aspects of this? Who they could listen to, and who they have listened to, and you know, I told you before, I'm thoroughly convinced that they listened to everything the Kerry campaign was doing.
Oh yeah,
what they were going to say, what his damn speeches were. You know, I mean,
well,
the business community ought to consider that too.
Well, you know, and I think you remember the Barron's editorial that hit last weekend.
Yes.
I think that might be part and parcel of the motivation behind it, because, you know, these aren't wild-eyed leftist workers' paradise types at Barron's magazine. They're very serious, they are very committed, they are very conservative, and they are very business-oriented, and I think that's part of what did happen. The light went on at Barron's, and one of some editor realized, wait a minute.
Well, you know, if they're truly conservatives, they can't possibly back this man.
No.
It's just, you know, this guy goes against everything they supposedly believe in.
Well, you know, I guess it was on Keith Olbermann's Countdown where he asked John Dean, who should know, you know, asked John Dean, did he think that Bush would be impeached? And he said, impeachment is a purely political question. And frankly, it's a political question for the House of Representatives. And he said, I don't think this Republican House of Representatives would get anywhere near it.
Yeah, but see, that's where, well, and I tried to make that point the other night, that's where I think people are wrong. I think that Republicans are going to turn on these people to try to save their own butt in 2006. And, you know, they could do it with honor, too, because it would be an honorable thing to do. You know, the man has, well, he has admitted to impeachable offenses to the whole United States of America. And then stuck his tongue out and said, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Sure.
That's exactly what he did. And like just reading this buzz flash thing, it says, Gonzalez to investigate leak of Bush's law breaking. No investigation planned for Bush's crime, probably because it's clear Bush broke the law.
Yeah, why do we need to? I mean, this isn't $70 million to find some hooker in a trailer park in Arkansas.
No, exactly.
This is easy. Just roll the videotape.
Oh, God. It's amazing, I'll tell you. And I, you know, I listened to Joe a little bit, and I really like Paul Krugman. But I think Krugman's wrong on this one. I think that... Well, I think by the time we get to the 2000 elections that we are going to take the House, and I think the Senate is probably going to be in jeopardy, for those people, too.
The 06, you mean?
Yes, 06. Yeah. What'd I say?
2000. You're time traveling.
Well, you know,
yeah.
I'm still retroactive.
Yeah.
Looking for bad babies.
mean Mexican immigrant babies. Dear God.
God. But, like I say, this, you know, you have to think about the capabilities that when Nixon was doing his thing and, you know, I mean, they didn't have all the computers and all the internet and all the, you know, telecommunications that we have today. I mean, when them guys wiretapped somebody had to climb a pole, didn't they?
You know, yeah, the hard way.
You know, have his little tool pouch on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
The little thing with the alligator clips on the end, like the phone guy has? Yeah.
Right. And I mean, you know, like, you think about... Now, all the major telecommunication companies have to be in league with these people.
Well, yeah, and they are in league, and they are being absolutely stone silent about it.
That's exactly right.
Because the fact of the matter, it all ties together, Wayne. Think about this for just a minute. We've talked about the national security letters, you know, that are contained within the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
That's where you drop a letter on a business and it's got built into it a court order that says you can't say a damn word about what we've asked you to do. Now, I know it may seem conspiracy theory, it may seem tinfoil helmet, black helicopter in the yard stuff, but just imagine for a moment that, say, oh, Verizon. Agent Fred from the National Security Agency drops a national security letter on Verizon that just says everybody.
Right.
Do you see what I mean now?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And what's Verizon going to do? They'll say, okay.
They don't have any choice.
Exactly.
They can't under the provisions of the Patriot Act, they can't take that to court. It can't be reviewed by a judge. And they are subject to criminal prosecution if they tell anybody that it's been done to them.
Well, and, you know, getting on that subject and talking about, like, federal workers and people like that, and, you know, like, so we need a whistleblower, you
yeah.
know. The whistleblower's got to come from the top. You know, I'm very upset with Jay Rockefeller, and Jay Rockefeller could have exposed this 3 years ago.
And chose not to.
And Jay Rockefeller doesn't have to worry about putting his kids through college or whether he's going to be able to pay the oil bill. He's
Jay Rockefeller.
Exactly. He doesn't have to worry about that. So he doesn't have anything to lose and everything to gain from being a true patriot.
Yeah.
Because he should have stood up.
Well, I guess with one possible exception.
More than him.
There are, what, 11, 14?
11 or 14 of them.
Yeah. But that also underscores one other thing. And that is, you know, Jay Rockefeller could buy George Bush for what he thinks he's worth.
Yeah, he could.
10 or 12 times over. And the same with Cheney and Rumsfeld. He could, you know, money is not an issue. Power is not an issue. Prestige is not an issue. One thing is an issue in all of this. And I think it does speak volumes out of the way that he handled this. You know, writing a letter to Dick Cheney in longhand, copying it out all over again, not even carbon paper, and putting it in an envelope and sticking it in a safe in the secure spaces of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Like I've said before, that's spy novel stuff. That's Ian Fleming stuff. That's what you do if you're afraid they will kill you. And that's the only thing that Rockefeller has to fear. And I frankly believe he was afraid that if he let this out, the Bush administration would wellstone him.
That may very well be true, Bob. That may very well be true.
And I hate to say it. It grieves me as a citizen of this republic to say it, Wayne, but I believe that is completely within the capability and intent and possibility of this gang of thugs that are running the government. They will kill without remorse anyone who gets in their way.
You know, that's awful hard to argue with, to be honest with you. You know.
Well, I mean, there's no other explanation for the way he did that letter.
I guess not. I guess you're absolutely right.
What, are they going to sue him?
No.
I mean, you could get $1 billion worth of punitive damages against Jay Rockefeller, and he'd write a check.
Yes, he would. I don't know. Something, you know, then, well, you know, if it's not our senators, then who? I mean, you know, the American people have got to scream loud enough, I guess, so that these people feel like they have somebody behind them.
Well, then,
is that what they need?
That's some of it, Wayne, and some of it is the softness. And, you know, you see it in the union movement, and we see it all over America. You know, look at, do you remember when the Romanian government fell? What was his name? Ceausescu. He was a vicious dictator. He killed his own people. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah. They hung him and his wife together or something, didn't they?
They surrounded the palace and made him get out. They did the same thing in, what was it, Ukraine? They came out in the streets and they said, leave or we'll take you out. And those were people who were not afraid to die.
And those were people that also didn't have anything to lose.
Right. And the thing is,
you know, that's how desperate they made the people.
What we haven't figured out, though, yet, Wayne, is that if we put up, with this domestic spying program from the Bush administration, people might think that they have something to lose by opposing it. But what they have, they have everything to lose by not opposing it.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Because you know what, they say that, you know, by comparison, it's easier to live under fascism than communism. Under fascism, all you have to do is go along and get along and shut up and don't make waves, and you know, you can make money, you can be happy, and as long as you do that, everything's okay. Well, that's about kind of where we are, isn't it?
That is where we are. That's exactly where we are.
I mean, what did they come out and call everybody who opposed the war?
A traitor.
We were un-American. Anthrax Coulter was out there saying that, you know, she's still saying it, that speech like what you and I are engaged in right now should be suppressed by the government.
Oh, they're going to try that, too. I mean, believe me, the Internet will be under severe attack there before. Well, it already is. I was reading something earlier today of some new regulation or something they passed. You know, that, believe me, they're coming after this, too.
Yeah, this is, it's...
And that's why they have to be stopped. And, you know, it's... Well, the Democrats have got, you know, then the Democratic senators and the Democratic caucuses and stuff have got to get together and oppose these people and come out with positions and you know, stand strong. I'm telling you, there's going to be Republicans who will come to our side because they want to be reelected in 2006.
I hope you're right. I would be glad to see it, but I can't imagine that out of Tom DeLay or Bill Frist Tom Tancredo, the Dreyer in California, you know, these just awful sleazebags, Saxby Chambliss, Jim DeMint, Tom Coburn, all of these creepy, evil Republicans. I can't see them doing that.
No, I can't see them doing that.
Yeah, Sensenbrenner.
There are more of them. You know, there's a lot more of them. You're talking about the leaders, the guys in power.
Well, those are the guys who are, you know, we can have 100 Republican foot soldiers join our side, but the leadership still has the power to say, this sucker ain't getting out of committee.
Oh, well, you know, we need people to get that out of committee. I'm telling you, if we got enough people, it can be done. It has to be done. It has to be done to save this country. It's just that simple.
Well, but, I mean, you understand the hurdles that we're facing.
Oh, I do understand them, but those hurdles can be overcome.
I don't, you know, I think maybe, here's how your scenario actually works, Wayne. If we retake the House in 06... then you will see some rank-and-file Republicans get on board with us. That, you know, that's how that happens. But if the Republicans still maintain control of the House of Representatives after the 2006 elections, George Bush is going to finish his term.
I agree. But that's what we have to work to make sure that that doesn't happen, that they don't, you know, keep control of the House.
You know, here in West Virginia, we have one job, and that is getting rid of Archmore in a bad wig, you know, Shelley. That woman and her knee pads have got to go.
Right, but see, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're messing that up already with who entered the race, Callahan.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, I can't think of his
Eric
name.
Wells.
Eric Wells. Eric Wells ran a very good campaign with very little money and very little support. And I think if he had a little bit of money and support, that he could have a chance of beating her. To start all over again, well, you know, and are Callahan and Eric both going to run?
I haven't seen it. I talked to Eric at the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, Wayne, and he said he had not made his mind up at the time. So, you know, frankly, it'll be simpler if there's not a primary fight, because that means there won't be any ill will.
Well, that's exactly right.
And, you know,
money gets spent that could be used.
That will be necessary in the general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, I don't know. I think he was a hell of a candidate.
He was a great candidate, and he showed very plainly that plain talk and commitment and common sense can beat that crazy woman.
That's exactly right. But like I say, with I mean, where's Callahan come? What county is he from?
Oh, he's from Nicholas County. He's from Nicholas? He's from Somersville.
Okay.
Well, around. I mean, he's the son of a fairly prominent lawyer over there. He's a good guy too.
Oh, I don't doubt that. You know, it's just, I think that's part of our, you know, part of our deal is that we get into these primary things and ill will is, you know, and the other side, they know who they're going to run a long time ago.
Yeah, the day they were born. Yeah, well,
exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll give her all the, I mean, you know, it's funny. I was listening to something. They go, well, Charlie Moore brought in as much money as somebody else, and she's only been there for this many years. I'm thinking, duh.
Well,
geez, I wonder.
Well, no. Your point is well taken, Wayne. The Republicans don't have primaries. The Republicans have coronations.
That's exactly right.
And Democrats,
you will donate.
You know, and we're Democrats, and we have primaries, and our primaries turn into circular firing squads.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. God.
I mean, you can see it. You can see it at work. On we talked about getting involved in the really grassroots, low level politics, the Democratic Party, and on a county by county basis. We talked about that.
Executive committees, yeah.
Yeah. Watch what happens. You know, watch it. There, people will absolutely destroy themselves over those small elected positions. And there is bad blood that can come out of a committee race that will last for a generation.
Well,
you know, among the Democrats, you know, I'm going to vote for his Republican opponent because 50 years ago, his granddaddy wouldn't vote for my granddaddy. And, oh, God.
Well, then, you know, dissension, you know, well, I'm going to cause some dissension. Then.
Go, man.
Well, I'm going to. I mean, I don't, you know, like the things have changed. We can't, you can't continue. That's what they call crazy, you know, when you do the same thing and expect a different result.
It's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again
well,
and expecting a different result.
Here,
sure.
You know, I mean, Raleigh County, in the last couple elections, we lost a senator and two House seats.
Boy, nothing succeeds like success.
You're right. Wow, you guys are really doing a great job there, committee.
Maybe you can knock down another senator and a couple more House members and lose the, you know, mayor's office or something.
Well, and I mean, that's like any office. That's not yours for life. You don't own that.
No.
You know, well, it's time, you know, that we got to start shaking things up. I'm running for that committee.
Go. I think that's great. I think that's exciting as can be.
Well, we need more people to do things like that. It's not the same commitment as the House. I mean, it's a commitment, but, you know.
Well, but frankly, I hope you saying that will provide a little bit of leadership, because I'll be quite honest, we've got to
get somebody to run against David Perry.
Well, that's a nice start.
A Democrat.
But, you know, a lot of our grassroots organizations think that, you know, well, okay, we'll form our little citizens group, and we'll form this group, and we'll form that group, and we'll do really great, noble, laudable things. But nothing's really gonna happen until you find a couple of smart, sharp, hardworking, driven, committed individuals out of that group, and you get them into office.
That's exactly right.
Then change happens.
That's exactly right.
You know, on the day that we've got an entire state house full of people who would spit on Don Blankenship before they'd take a penny of his money, then we can start making something happen in West Virginia.
Well said. Well said. You know, talking about, who did you mention? Proxmire?
Yeah.
You know, he didn't take campaign contribution.
Not a penny.
Did not take campaign contribution. Now that.
Well, there was one year when his campaign filings were like $280.
And that's probably what it cost to file to run.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was a unique man.
He went about to his constituents, he talked plain truth to them, he spoke facts to them, and they saw him work every day to take care of their money and to take care of their well-being.
Well, he was a different guy. He used to run to work every day.
Yeah.
10 miles to work. Now, that's, you know, that before jogging became.
Yeah, back when it was just crazy.
Yeah, yeah, he was just some nuts guy running. Oh, well.
But he is missed.
Like that. You know, we used to, and that's what's so a shame. You know, I mean, like, we used to have really great men that ran this country. Now we got a bunch of crooks.
Yeah.
It's sad.
But you know, I'm equal opportunity on all this, Wayne. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I was raised a Democrat. I will die a Democrat because I believe that that is where the soul of this nation lies. But by saying that, that does not mean Democrats get a pass.
No, they don't get a pass.
I would be running around the yard with my hair on fire if some Democrat president had been caught just spying on the American people for the sheer hell of it.
Yes, and that's exactly what they should be doing.
But a Republican won't do that. A Republican will sacrifice this nation. A Republican will sacrifice his fellow man, his neighbor, his sainted mother. A Republican will sacrifice anything and everything for the party.
Including their children's futures.
Precisely. And that's why I can't stand them.
Oh, God. Oh, well. All I could say is I'm not going to lay down, man.
No.
We got to keep fighting, and I think we got to, you know, it has to start somewhere. We have to start now. If we don't reach our goals in 206, then, you know, then we have to keep fighting, so we do it in 208. But we have to keep fighting. We have to become more efficient and more dedicated to what we're trying to
do. And maybe just a little bit more mean, Wayne.
Means okay. That, you know, I mean, these guys, politics and elections to these people is war.
Yeah.
It is out and out war.
For us, it's a parlor game.
Exactly. There's no off years to them. There are none of, you know, and nothing, you know, lying or all that stuff doesn't matter.
Killing.
As long as you win.
Right.
That's all that matters. It doesn't matter if you have to destroy somebody personally, if you have to tell lies about them. Like they did with about John McCain and all that, Jeff. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter at all. As long as you win and you're in power, then everything's okay.
Because that's what matters. Wayne, thanks so much. We got to get out of here.
All right, buddy. I'll be talking. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too. Stay safe.
Agnes too, and all the kids.
All right. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye now. And a quick break, and then the final hour of Head On for the year 2005. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Love is fine. Oh, yes, indeed, we know that people will find a way to go no matter what the man says. And love is fine for all we know. For all we know, our love will grow. That's what the man says. So won't you listen to what the man says.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating, just very devastating, and the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could
make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Thanks for sticking around. I hope your New Year's weekend is wonderful. Do you do the New Year's meal tradition? Some places it's corned beef and cabbage. Where I grew up in the South, it was black-eyed peas. I think we'll do both just to be safe. I try to be rational, but a little bit of superstition creeps in from time to time. I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and the phone number, do you know? Of course you know it. 877-443-2366, and email to bob@headonradio.com, and you're always welcome to chime in. Joe Vecchio is with us just now. Hey, Joe, Happy New Year to you.
Hi, Bob. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
I don't have a tradition on New Year's. Actually, mostly my traditions on New Year's are sleeping. I've never looked at New Year's as a big holiday in particular. Although this year I'm making a turkey. Actually, what happened was I had bought the turkey for Christmas, but somebody invited me over somewhere, so I figured I'll have it New Year's instead.
And turkey soup and turkey salad.
Well, you know, that's good because I like to cook.
Yeah.
Being an Italian guy, I like to cook. And, in fact, I took the turkey that I made for Thanksgiving. And since it was only me, I had a lot of leftovers, and I just used that to make a whole bunch of soup. I made a huge pot of it, and I just froze it and kept it in cups in the freezer.
Oh, and that's delicious.
And, yeah, and just, you know, and I do the same thing with, I have another soup that I make, a chicken soup with, I use a little tomato paste in there like my family used to do.
Yeah.
And you just mix it in with little, you use little tiny macaroni like an orzo.
Right, right.
Or sometimes we take egg pastine and we make like an oatmeal type of thing.
Oh, man.
Out of it. And it's something my family used to make when I was growing up. And it's really good and really filling.
And this, you know, and this time of year, it makes you just feel right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I wanted to wish a Happy New Year and all that. And I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on the predictions, because, you know, in about a minute and a half, I only have time for so many predictions.
That's true.
But I did want to talk about why I think the Republicans were going to maintain control of Congress. It's just like when, you know, since 1992, really, I've been pretty much right about everything that's been going to happen in this country as far as elections are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Clinton was going to get reelected in 96. I knew that was a given. I wasn't too sure about 2000 until it went into kind of limbo, and as soon as there was a challenge of that, I knew that Al Gore was never going to get in the presidency.
Well, I don't want to be taken as in any wise bigoted or anything like that, but I'll tell you honestly, Joe, I knew that Al Gore was not going to enter the White House the minute that he nominated Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of a bad mistake, and especially looking at the way Joe's been acting since, I'm glad, because Joe is the most mealy-mouthed, knee-paired wearing Bush lover. He's what are some of the blogs calling him? He's a Fox Democrat.
Yeah, and of course the classic is Bart Cop, you know, pink tutu.
Yeah, pink tutu, exactly. We've got several. And Kerry was the same way. And, you know, I supported Howard Dean during the primaries, and I was saddened to see that the Democratic leadership was mainly responsible for knocking this guy down. There's a lot of stories about that, but the truth is that the leadership didn't want this guy in there. And then they picked Kerry. But either way, I said to myself, no Democratic nominee, none of these people, no matter what you think of them, is going to sit in the White House. And, you know, the Kerry people who I knew, and I voted for Kerry. I mean,
sure, I did too.
I'm not an idiot, but, you know, I knew he was never going to get into office. I never said that he wasn't going to get elected.
Right.
I said he was never going to get into office. I mean, there's a big difference there. And I think in 2006 we're going to see a lot more of the same. Because part of it is just gerrymandering. I mean, I don't know if this Texas thing is going to stand up, that delay orchestrated.
Well, I don't have a lot of hope, Joe, just because it's going before the Supreme Court. And, you know, if a Republican wants it, then we can pretty much count on Scalia and Thomas and Roberts and, you know, the crowd to go along.
Right, and especially if Scalito gets in there as well. And
oh,
I don't like this guy at all. I mean, I'm an Italian guy, and I am ashamed of Scalia, that he's an Italian-American, because he makes us all look bad. And he's such an idiot. And Thomas. I call them, I call them Spanky and Buckwheat.
Yeah.
That's basically what I think about them. And, you know, I call them, actually, the term I use for them is most is dissenters in chief. Because whenever there's something, you always see, when it's something progressive, the two dissenters almost invariably were Scalia and Thomas, and sometimes Rehnquist. Sometimes even Rehnquist didn't go along with them.
Well, I mean, look, the classic,
they were.
Yeah, the classic case, Joe, is the business about not executing the mentally retarded.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this long, tortured explanation by Scalia because, you know, he's so much smarter than all of us,
right,
saying that, well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says we can't execute the retarded. You know, and I get so sick of that, you know, and he feels so proud of that, Joe, because he's being an originalist. It's like he thinks he can channel Madison and Adams and Hamilton and that crowd. He thinks that he's inside their skulls.
Well, the more I see what's going on in this country, the more I appreciate the founding fathers and what they did. But if they made a mistake, and the mistake they made, and it really wasn't their fault because they could not have predicted it, the mistake they made was that the checks and balance system that they created within the government, they didn't create anything for the environment outside of the government. You know, I always believe in what I call the three pillars of a democratic society, and that's a free press, a free government, and free enterprise. You have to have all three, and they work in balance and they work in conjunction with each other. A free government is what establishes and enforces the rights. A free enterprise is what gives those rights meaning. I mean, rights don't mean anything if everybody's broke, right?
Right.
And free press is what basically keeps an eye on everything and makes sure that there's no corruption. And what we have basically is a corruption of both the free enterprise, excuse me, the free press system and free government by corporate money.
Yeah, and without running off too far into the land of the fringes, our framers never envisioned a system of government whereby there would be only two political parties viability.
But, what's funny is that when Jefferson first started out, didn't believe in political parties at all. He thought they were evil. But then when he became president, he realized that unless you have a group of people who are coordinated, you couldn't get anything done.
Well, right, and he was very concerned and very nervous about federal power, but the minute he got some federal power in his hands, Joe, was anybody at the time that he took his first oath of office, did anybody think it would be possible for the federal government to just buy a continent?
Yeah, well, but I guess it was a legal deal along those lines. I really don't know that much about, you know, the Louisiana Purchase and all that stuff. And how that was handled. My American history is not as good as my Athenian history, which is really, really kind of sad. But the more I learn about American history, the more I appreciate the greatness of people like Lincoln and Jefferson, too, because Jefferson, even though there were some things that I disagree with him about, was a tremendous intellect and really had an understanding. I mean, he had an understanding of the role religion should and should not play in government.
Right.
I mean, religion is a private thing. I've always looked at it as a private thing. And living down here in the South and having been raised up in the North, it was astounded me the difference there is. I mean, people in the North, where I grew up anyway, we were mostly Catholic.
Yeah, you get up, you go to Mass. Yeah.
People didn't wear it on their sleeves. They didn't shout it from the pulpit. And I always kind of felt uncomfortable doing that. And I think, you know, when Howard Dean was running, he felt uncomfortable doing that because up in the Northeast, that's generally not how people are raised to do it. But down here in the South, people do that all the time. You know, it's always have a blessed day or praise Jesus, every other word in some cases. And it's like, look, I appreciate, you know, and I don't want to seem insensitive to your religious beliefs, but shut up.
You know? I know.
Shut up. I mean, I really don't care.
I grew up in it, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's pervasive. And I think, look, you know, the human rights issues we talk about, things like letting two people, if they love each other, care for each other and pass benefits to each other and you know, do all the things that we traditionally do with marriage. That idea would not have any trouble at all getting traction in this country. And frankly, there are probably a lot of people in so-called religion industry churches now that are like, well, why can't we live and let live? But they cannot get to that point because they are held back by their leadership, which is, you know, founded on bigotry.
Well, there's religion and there's fundamentalism. And, you know, I'm totally against fundamentalism. I'm really not a big fan of any organized religion. I mean, I think the universe is far too complex for us to just dwindle it down that easy, whatever is going on, you know?
Yeah.
But whatever it is, any, you know, organized religion invariably causes a lot more trouble than good it does. You know what I mean?
No, through history.
I mean, I really, you know, and the truth is I have a lot more respect for Catholics because Catholics at least do a lot more for the poor.
Well, I read a story today, Joe. There's a move afoot in Michigan, for instance. There is a move afoot being put forward by their Republican legislature to put a 2-year cutoff on welfare recipients.
Yeah, they're always trying to do stuff like that.
And you know, bless their hearts. I got all kinds of issues with the Roman Catholic Church, but you know, they came out. And they, you know, the church said, "Wait a minute, this is just evil.
Yeah.
And they're dead wrong on birth control. They're dead wrong on abortion. But the fact of the matter is, they are, you know, they're also 100% correct on the death penalty.
And yeah, and you know, you won't see a Mother Teresa in a Baptist church.
No.
There,
no,
there are nobody. There's no. You know, and what really gets me is that some people take that so seriously. I mean, the perfect example of that is the former governor of Alabama. Is he still the governor, or did he get kicked out yet?
Well, Guy Hunt.
I think so. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, Guy Hunt was kicked out, convicted. Yeah.
And all he said was basically, "Look, this is unchristian to let the poor people suffer."
Oh no, that's Bob Riley. Yeah.
Riley. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he's up for election in 06.
And what he said was it was unchristian for us to let poor people suffer. And he suggested raising taxes on the rich while lowering taxes on poor people.
Yeah.
And
they did
it. Poor people were the ones who voted him out.
Well,
they would have gotten their taxes lowered.
Yeah, they voted down that referendum, and if they would have had an opportunity, they would have gotten a rope.
Yeah, they probably would have. And again, it would have benefited them. And it's a form of insanity, and it was whipped up by this kind of anti-tax. And everybody, and all the Republicans have to say is raise taxes. That's all they have to say. And people don't understand that it's raise taxes on certain people, but not on them. I told people in 2000 when Bush got in, I said, hang on to one of your pay stubs. And 4 years later, take your current pay stub and take a look at it and compare it to the 2001 and see if you're paying any more or less taxes as a percentage of what you've been making, or even if you've been making any more. And I'll guarantee you there's not going to be any really substantial difference. And if you're seeing that, you still vote for George W. Bush on the basis that he's going to lower taxes. You're an idiot, and I don't even want to talk to you anymore.
Exactly.
I just don't understand what some people do, but people don't think in this country. And that's one of the big reasons why I predict that the Republicans are not going to really change substantially, because they're still very good at these hot-button issues, and their machine is very, very powerful, and we don't have anything like it.
No, we don't. That's one of the reasons that Howard Dean became chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Joe, is because he reinvented the fundraising structure.
Mm-hmm.
and raised a tremendous amount of money on nickels and dimes at a time. And the thing, and he's already proven to be a bigger fundraiser than any other chairman has ever been. And yet the right wing is out there spreading the message that, well, he's a failure as a leader of the Democratic National Committee. This is the worst thing. Can you imagine anyone taking seriously what the Republicans think about the Democrats' leadership structure?
Well, you know, when you've got people on the radio hounding it into these people's minds at work every single day. You know, day in and day out, hour after hour, minute after minute. I mean, it just gets ingrained, and they're telling them people what they want to hear in a way that they want to hear it, and they just do it so much better. I mean, I can sit back and you know, you and I can talk about the Melian dialogues and all this other stuff, and they have no clue of what we're talking about.
No,
and they don't care. All they say is there's a poor person, or there's a black person, there's a Mexican person. We hate them. Point at someone, say there's your enemy.
Right,
and that's all they need, and that's food for their tiny little brain.
Yeah, tell the average ignorant, God, you know, it breaks my heart to even think of my fellow countrymen that way. But we've got to deal with facts as they stand, Joe. There are a lot of just dirt ignorant Americans, and if you point to somebody and say, everything that is going wrong in your life, the fact that you and your wife fight over money, the fact that your kids are on crack, the fact that your kid dropped out of high school, blah, 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 it's not your fault, sweetheart. It's those brown people.
And it's the gay people getting married.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Those, you know, what was the guy's name? Steve something. He wrote a really, really good thing about liberalism, and he died a very mysterious death, a suicide. So they said a suicide. He died actually in the bathroom of somebody he had been going after for a long time. But at any rate, he was talking about how what happened was after the Soviet Union fell and after there was no longer a real serious threat from communism,
uh-huh,
the people who were running the propaganda outlets in Europe, you know, Radio Free Europe and all that stuff,
right,
turned their attention on to America. And there was a combination of different things. In 1975, there was a law called the Sunpac Law, and it was one of those election reforms things passed after Watergate,
uh-huh,
which basically, for the first time, allowed corporations not just to have a political action committee, but to create them and fund them using their own money. Prior to that, they still had to raise money like everybody else. They weren't allowed to use their money. And before this law was passed, there were maybe 15 or 20 corporate-run political action committees. After the law was created, within 2 years, there were something like 2,000 or 3,000. And
right.
That's when the whole K Street political infrastructure started to get really, really corrupt. And if you can ask any congressman, good or bad, they spend probably 60 to 70% of their time raising money, because they have to raise approximately like $1 million a year just to keep their office.
And that's beyond obscene. I know the person you're talking about. He died in the restroom of Richard Mellon Scaife.
Yeah, I believe it was Scaife that he was after. Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe Greg Palast covered some of it. But I know exactly what you're talking about because I read the article. And the thing is, you know, this is one of those situations, Joe, where simplicity could make things so easy. You know, just create a law that says, you shall not take money from outside donors, and we'll have public financing of campaigns, and you can get it out and fight it out on the issues. But again, that is not ever going to take place because the other side, the Republicans, cannot win on the issues.
Sure, of course not. And you know, it's the same way with, you know, I talk about the Diebold voting machine. In fact, my last show, I was talking with Phyllis Euster from CountPaperBallots.com. And we got to get rid of these machines because, you know, they're making it impossible for anybody to seriously get elected if two guys in their pajamas in a room somewhere can flip the vote.
Well, I had a story. I don't know if you saw it. I didn't get to it. I'm glad you mentioned it, Joe. The same card that fits into a Diebold machine is also the same card that is in a device that's used to scan the moisture amount in corn scanners.
Hmm.
And some people were able to take the card out of those corn scanners and just change them out with a Diebold machine and completely rearrange the outcome of the test. And it flashed a message on the screen, said something like, ha-ha, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they were able to write on that same card. What does it tell us when Diebold completely backs out of the process in North Carolina because North Carolina passes a law that says you will escrow all of your source code?
And then the political appointees in North Carolina go ahead and approve Diebold anyway.
Yeah.
You know, despite all this evidence. And, you know, the thing about the whole thing is that we had a discussion with this with a local election reform group from a representative of a local politician, we'll say. Okay, I don't want to give out a name.
Sure.
But we posed the question about why is it that people here in Georgia, and I live here in Georgia, which is where one of the first states to have it statewide, everything by Diebold machines. We posed the question, why is it that we can't make a point about having completely accountable, easily accurate elections in Georgia? And this person said that the public would never go for it. And that's where the real problem is.
The public.
The public. Because we still have more than half of the people in the country itself don't vote and don't participate in politics at all. And that's a huge disaster right there, because any kind of democratic republic, you're going to need the citizens to be responsible. And as I've said in one of my Cup of Joe reports, it's a very short distance between being a citizen and being a subject. And a lot of people would prefer to just be a subject. Leave me alone. Don't bother me. You know, and we'll do just fine. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. If you say, leave me alone, don't bother me, sooner or later, somebody's going to come and bother you.
Well, that's true. And look at the number of people who consider, well, A, look at the number of people who will not, no matter what, will not go and vote in an election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how lazy, how pitiful have we become when taken, you know, an hour, okay, two, out of your day and going to the polling place and casting your vote is too much of a hassle. And the other civic, I consider it a civic responsibility or a civic honor that is to serve on a jury.
Sure.
You ever
a lot of people won't do it just because they might get called up. Exactly.
You know, somebody gets a jury duty subpoena, and they start thinking about how to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a suit against an insurance company or a red car, blue car wreck, or, you know, maybe it's a life and death matter in a murder trial.
Well, if we can do one thing, and some people do have a point, if you're a person who makes a lot of money, and sitting for 2 weeks on a jury would be a financial hardship for you because they don't get paid anywhere near the kind of money you'd be making in the private industry. Maybe they can do some sort of tax incentive for the employee so that those people get the same amount of money that they would have been making while they were...
Yeah, why not?
You know, if you do that, then more people would be willing to go to hell. More people would jump at it because it's a way to get away from work for a couple of weeks.
Sure.
You know? But there's also, but there is still a lot of people, I just don't want to do it because I don't want to get involved. This is my life. My life is, you know, you talk about George Bush living in a bubble. Everybody lives in a little bubble of their own.
Right.
You know, and I have relatives like that, and I talk about them sometimes, and I was like, look, this is life for them. You grow up, you go to school, get a good education, you get a job, you get married, you pump out a few more units, and you repeat the process. This is life. There is absolutely nothing else. That's the way they see it. And you can never break them out of it. I got a relative who's proud of the fact that that her grandson is going to be a corporate lawyer. You know, and she brags about that. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, is this person going to be helping Enron screw people over or another company just steal somebody's pension? You know, and is that?
Yeah.
But all this person, corporate lawyer.
And we're gonna measure that individual's worth by the number of digits on his paycheck.
Right, and the country's just gone insane. To be perfectly honest, the country's just gone nuts. Maybe we're not as bad as Germany went nuts in the 20s and 30s, but all the bad things that are part of American history, and you know, as much as I love America and think it's the greatest country that's ever been created, there's you know, that background of racism. Of classism,
genocide,
you know, just basically the attitude is we want something and we're going to take it by force if we have to. But through all of that, there are still some good things that go on. I mean, I wish we actually believed in the ideals that were printed in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence.
Well, at some point we did. I don't know where does it end with the advent of television, Joe? Is that it?
That's part of it, I think, because I think what television did was wind up separating people. When people used to have to socialize, they used to have to get together in crowds to socialize.
Yeah.
You know, go to the movies or go to a play or just go out somewhere to have an event. Now people can just sit in their homes and you know, laugh at other people, you know, watching Cops or something like that.
Or, you know, and maybe the ultimate example of that may well be the Internet.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really grateful for the folks who sit in the Tom Hartman chat room and listen. But that is what replaces our sense of community now.
Sure. But it's remarkable that we still have that same kind of sense of community that even in an environment like that. My wife, she used to go on a website that basically was just a game website. They had like slot machines and little, all these different types of games, bingo and poker and all these things.
Yeah.
And they had little chat rooms on the side. And she developed relationships with these people that she would go on and play these games with.
Right.
And, you know, after she passed away, a couple of them even called me crying to express their condolences. And these are people that she never met.
Yeah.
She never met in person.
Yeah, that's the upside.
The downside is, if you ever go to Daily Kos or Democratic Underground or any of these places where a lot of people gather, you will see such cliques. And people backbiting each other.
Oh, yes.
And you know, you make a post. You know, I make several posts there, and I realize that I write. I don't know the right word for it, but it's very. You know, I talk about history and I talk about things in very flowery language and stuff like that. And people don't want to hear that. They want to hear the different versions of "Oh, Bush is going to get it now."
Oh, to the moon, Alice! To the moon.
And you think after 5 years of nothing happening to Bush. You know, and regardless of what scandal, I mean, look at illegal war, how he acted after 9/11, Abu Ghraib.
Outing CIA agents.
Outing CIA agents, secret prisons in Europe, and now spying on our own people illegally. I mean, you know, even if he wanted to get a warrant for it, he could have got a warrant for it, but he doesn't care because he doesn't care about democracy. People don't understand that. And they feel, well, he's protecting us, or, you know, and nothing happens to him. I mean, he's still untouchable at this point. If we retake Congress, maybe.
Yeah, but boy, he's going to get it then.
Yeah, but you know something? We're not going to retake Congress. Not only do I predict it, I absolutely guarantee it that we will not retake Congress in 2006. And it's not because there's not a desire in this country for that, because I think most of the people want to see a serious change and want to see, you know, at least accountability in government. They're either too afraid to get involved, or the system is already rigged against them. And we have to fight on several fronts. And I think the first thing we have to fight for is to get rid of the machines and make the election process as accurate as possible. That's the first thing we got to do. Second thing we got to do is we got to change how campaigns are financed. What you talked about, public financing, that's one way. Another way is to just ban all corporate contributions completely.
Yeah.
Ban them all. The only way you can get money is from individual citizens and only limited to, say, $200 per person. Maybe you have two sets of donations. You can donate once in the primaries, and you can donate once in the election.
See, I believe in a fundraising law that says thou shalt not. Because the minute you say $200, there's going to be a court challenge of whether that's too, you know, if you say thou shalt not take a nickel, there will be a court challenge that says, can I give 5 pennies?
But I also look at it from a point of view of fundraising is a way you can tell what kind of support a politician actually has. If they're raising, you know, a politician who raises only $10,000, it doesn't have the same kind of support as a politician who can, buy, you know, in that respect, but from small donations, who can raise, you know, $1 million, who can actually do that. That means people are willing to support this person with their money. And that's like, you know, that's like a free market, people who are shopping.
Well, that's the beautiful, we're going to have it reconsidered when our legislature meets to, you know, end of January here in West Virginia. This public financing campaign idea we have here, it's the national name for it is Clean Elections. And the part and parcel of that is if you want to run for the West Virginia State Senate, you've got to go out and get 100 people to give you $10.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take that money and you turn it into the county, into the circuit clerk or the county clerk, whatever. You don't run out and spend it. But that means that there are people out there behind you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty good. How do they do it in England? I think they give a certain amount of money to each candidate, to each candidate who meets certain qualifications. And they give them that money, and they're required to pay it back at the end of the election, or what they don't spend. And they're only allowed to spend that much money on a campaign.
The other reform, I mean, if we're going to get out here and theorize, Joe, the other reform that might be valid would be to have a dramatically reduced campaign season, because we, you know, at this point in time, we treat political campaigns as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, they're vital to the news media, and well, you know, hell, they're vital to the likes of you and me,
mm-hmm.
because it gives us something to talk about for a long, long time. But if, on the other hand, you had primary in May, general election in July, I mean, you mentioned England, I think, and you know, a couple of our listeners there could very well straighten us up on this. But I think the cycle is 6 weeks.
Well, I'm not sure. Well, you know, I'm also in favor of changing just the way we do primaries. I kind of think that we ought to start primaries in the East and just move them slowly west across the country so that a politician has to go across the country. And stop both. You know, one of the things that really hacked me off about the whole Dean thing was that the Iowa thing led to the New Hampshire thing, and everything just snowballed from there.
Yeah.
So we basically have Iowa and New Hampshire determining who's going to be the candidate.
And Iowans and New Hampshireites are fine people.
Yeah,
but
fine people, but they're what, 2 or 3% of the population?
Yeah, and our primary here in West Virginia came up in May. Everything was said and done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess technically we helped push Kerry over the top, but by the time our primary got here, anything but a vote for Kerry, bless him, was a waste.
Sure, and we also, another thing we need to do is to require any kind of television station or radio station or whatever to give X amount of free airtime to each candidate, each qualified candidate, free of charge as a condition of keeping their damn license.
Yeah.
You know, this way, because they are
the public airwaves.
And that's also, you know, the biggest cost for any campaign. Yeah, the airwaves belong to the public, and it's the biggest expense for any candidate to have these, you know, buy these commercials and commercial time.
Right.
So if you can arrange that, but the first thing you got to do is just make the elections accurate. If you make the elections accurate, I guarantee you that Democrats will start winning more elections on a local. Unstop the gerrymandering too. I don't like it when the Democrats do it. I don't like it when the Republicans
Precisely.
Do it. You know, make it by boundary. Other things. You know, so many other things that we need to change. But the first thing we got to do is just get the elections back to where people are actually doing it. Count the votes by hand. In the polls where they were, you know, don't put them in a box and send them somewhere where they can get lost or misplaced. Count them by hand. And, you know, if it takes a little while longer, it takes a little while longer. Where's the law that says we have to have the results 5 minutes after the polls close?
Well, exactly, you know, because nobody's going to take office for, what, 4, 6, 8
exactly.
weeks after that happens? Sure.
You've got till January, for crying out loud.
Well, you know, Canada hand counts everything, and they've got the results the next day.
And you know, they do it in every country in Europe. They count everything by hand, and it takes about a day or so to get everything counted because they're doing it at a small level and just counting up, you know, that the the poll places go to the district center. Then the district center sends those results up to the county level, and then it goes to the state level, and then national level.
Right.
You can do that. It'd be very easy. Each polling place is only going to be counting a few thousand votes.
And by virtue of that micromanagement of the process, Joe, that also dramatically reduces the influence that any fraud could have, because any fraud that takes place has to take place on a monumental basis
in order
to succeed.
Now, you can't have two guys in their pajamas, you know, punching a computer screen and flipping votes.
Eating Cheetos.
Basically what's been going on. I mean, look at what happened in Ohio with, they were using the, I thought it was funny that they were using the Diebold machines to determine whether or not they were going to use Diebold machines to count the votes anymore. And the voting was almost exactly opposite of what the exit polls said.
Yeah.
So, you know, you knew there was something going on there, but of course you can't challenge it because you're a moon bat if you challenge it.
Absolutely.
So, getting rid of the stupidity of the people, I don't know how you can do that. I mean, there are always going to be idiots. I mean, what was it Paul Krugman said in his latest article, something that we've been saying for years, it's okay if you're a Republican. You know, the guy you were talking about, Miller.
Yeah.
He can have an affair. That's all right. But Clinton can't have an affair.
Oh, no.
You know, Clinton has a BJ in the White Office. That's an impeachable offense. George Bush starts a war that kills tens of thousands of Iraqis and over 2,000 American soldiers. Oh, that's not an impeachable offense.
No.
You know? And,
well, I mean, and we saw, you know, not to rehash what is now ancient history, Joe, but, you know, we saw it in the middle of the Clinton impeachment. Newt Gingrich was out there banging his aide like a cheap Chinese gong, lecturing Bill Clinton on Monica.
And how many others? There were several.
Henry Hyde broke up a marriage. They tried to make David Livingston the Speaker of the House in Gingrich's absence, and it turns out that guy couldn't walk through New Orleans without walking into a brothel.
And there were others. Hyde was one who had an affair.
Sure.
And he called, what did he call, youthful indiscretion. What was he, 40 years old?
Yeah. And Bob Barr?
And Barr?
I forget who the guy was that had paid for an abortion for his mistress.
Yeah, that was Barr.
It was that Barr?
That was Barr. And also there were rumors about George Bush having paid a Mexican woman to have an abortion.
Absolutely. Well, robbing somebody in Houston.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course that'll never come out because they're very, very good at taking care of those little family secrets.
Yeah. So, you know, you get away with it. And you know, we had the polling data all through the Clinton thing about how the American people disapproved of that. The Republicans in Congress didn't give a tinker's damn about what the Americans thought. They were going to pursue political power, political punishment, and anything to advance the party. That's, you know, I was talking with Wayne about that. That's how they are.
Well, they're Republicans first and Americans when it's convenient.
Exactly.
That's how I've always seen it. And or at least, you know, since I've become aware of what's been going on in our country. They're just, you know, it's a big difference between, I don't want to say conservatives because these people aren't really conservatives, but
no.
The big difference between Republicans and liberals is that as far as the Republicans, the world ends when they die.
Yeah.
So everything that goes on, it goes on just to keep them, you know, rich in their lifetimes and damn what happens in the future. Liberals, on the other hand, they build systems that last well beyond their lifetime. Social Security, when Social Security was first put into place, a lot of the people who voted for it, especially a lot of the people who had been in Congress for a long time, they were never going to live to see it.
No.
But they weren't interested in that. They were looking for the long-term financial security of the United States. And it is the most wildly successful government program in the history of the world. And these guys want to destroy it. First they go after your jobs, then they go after your pensions, and now they're going after Social Security, and they want to bring it right back to the days where the old people are out on the street because they didn't have connections or they didn't have the skills to make god-awful sums of money.
And see, this is where I become, I earn my stripes as a real, live, honest-to-God radical liberal, Joe. See, when we talk about the debate over Social Security, my question isn't, what are we, you know, how are we going to be able to pay it to 70-year-olds? My question is, why don't we have a structure that's set up in such a way that we're talking about where people can draw their Social Security at 58?
Mm-hmm.
And that the amount of money that they draw is an amount of money sufficient to live a human life.
Well, we're supposed to work till we die. And I see this attitude from so many working people, and it sickens me because these are the ones that really should be fighting to protect all this so that they can, you know, why is it that, you know, like I said in the one report, why is working in poverty a nobility? There's nothing noble about that.
No.
You're being suckered. you're being suckered.
Yeah, and when you get to be 58, 60 years old, you know, and you know, with me here at, you know, soon 43, that doesn't look like a long way away to me.
Huh.
But you know, you get to 58, you've done what you did, you've given the better part of your life to raise your family, to feed them, to house them, clothe them. And but you know, maybe at that age, you know, you still got a lot of good work life left. Maybe you always wanted to sit back and maybe you wanted to work on an archaeological dig. Okay, that would be me. Maybe, you know, but, you know, maybe you wanted to learn to be a chef.
But, you know, maybe you just want to spend the rest of your days watching TV and drinking beer at the local bar.
That, too.
You know, if you want to do that, I don't see anything wrong with that if you've put in your time and you've worked and, you know, there's no law that says you have to struggle. And we get so angry at people who we think are not doing their fair share. I mean, that's part of the whole racism thing. We just don't think that blacks are work hard enough. Yeah, and even when a black guy does work hard enough, we don't recognize that. Unless, of course, they're like a Colin Powell, who are just, you know, white suck-ups.
Yeah.
Where Harry Belafonte, what do you call a house slave?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, I don't want to use the word.
No, I know. Well, you know, it's great you came around to that. You know, we love Ann Coulter, don't we? Guess what? Now, you talk about Republicans can get away with it. Now, do you remember, Joe, let's bomb their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity?
Oh,
remember
yeah,
that?
That's Ann.
She's got a new one. This is from a column she published yesterday. This is sung to the tune of Jingle Bells. Kwanzaa bells, dashikis sell, whitey has to pay. Burning, shooting, oh, what fun on this made-up holiday.
Wonderful. And as if Christmas wasn't a made-up holiday anyway, or at least one that wasn't stolen.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but again, there's one guy out there, and I can't remember his name, but he says if you scratch any so-called conservative movement, you will find a drive toward low wages.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But the other side of that, and it's becoming a bit of a theme, and I hope folks don't mind, the other side of that, Joe, is that you can just about look at any Republican social so-called policy, and if you scratch it even a little bit and blow the dust off of it, you can find, you know, you find a you know, sheets and pillowcases and, you know, just howling bigotry.
Well, they feed on fear, and whether they're bigots themselves doesn't really matter to them. They just feed on fear. And
they promote the bigotry of other people.
Sure. I mean, that's how they get their power, is scaring other people into giving it to them. And unfortunately, it works because people respond to these emotional issues.
I mean, these gay marriage people, a lot of folks that I know in the so-called gay community, you know, they suspect that when they hear this rampant homophobia and the defense of marriage garbage and stuff, they think that they are looking latency right in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they are. But the other, you know, there's a terror there that I can't comprehend. You know, you're happily married, you've been married 10, 15 years, you haven't been to the Martina McBride concert with the girlfriend yet. But you know, if gay people get married, somebody's going to sodomize you.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of it is also some people just get bored. I mean, you have your life like that and everything's happy and taken care of. You need something to energize you. And, you know, pointing at somebody else and saying, you know, let's get this guy, that's one way of doing it.
Well, it's all the Twilight Zone, isn't it, Joe? Do you remember the Monsters Are Due on Maple Street? The one where you know there's a power outage, the cars won't start, and all of a sudden the neighborhood freaks out and they look. Hey, look, they haven't been here as long as the rest. I bet it's them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and you know, next thing somebody's dead.
That was a Twilight Zone episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And look at what happened in New Orleans. You take away, you know, one of my favorite documentaries is called Connections by James Burke back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he talked about is how dependent we are upon the technology that we have. You know, electricity. I mean, we take electricity for granted, but could you imagine life now without electricity?
We imagined it about 12 years ago when my daughter was born, Joe. There had been an ice storm. We were without power for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we lost power here during a bad ice storm in Atlanta for a couple of weeks as well. And we got by okay, but we knew the electricity
was coming back.
We knew we'd had it. We knew what. Could you imagine people if it went away and it didn't come back, what would happen? Or what happens if the gas goes away? And you know, one of the things that I point out is that, you know, I look around some of the neighborhoods around here in Atlanta. I'm sure you have the same in West Virginia and all the other places. It's all suburbs. If there was no more gas, how would these people live?
How would they get to the store?
How could the store get the stuff that they need?
Right.
You know, and so what good would it be to go to the store if the store had no way of getting the food so that people can buy it?
Joe, Americans, by and large, do not have the first clue of how fragile a system they're living in.
And that's
Your drinking water, I'm guessing, comes out of the Chattahoochee River.
And I don't even swim in that river.
The last couple times
I swam in that, I got sick.
Yeah, and you can walk across it. You know, down there where 41 crosses into Marietta, you can walk across it. It's barely deep enough to drown in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the water supply for a city of how many million?
Oh, God, we got about 3 or 4 million here.
Yeah.
If you count the whole general area, 3 or 4 counties. Yeah, water is a big issue. In fact, I saw an article in the New York Times about Nevada, about the gold mines there that have been sucking out the water. And when the gold mines go away because they're running out of gold, it's going to cause a huge drain on the water supply in Nevada. And that's a desert. That's a desert.
Already it's
a
desert.
Look at how much water they waste in Las Vegas alone. Just these big outdoor fountains. That all goes up into the air.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is why, you know, the Bush people and the Cheney people can get away with some of the stuff that they do in Saudi Arabia, in Iraq and all these places, is because people understand that what they're doing is they're stealing oil for us.
Yeah,
and if people see it that way, you know, it's okay to have. It's just like if the country was a family, you have a father who you discover is just a thief and a murderer, but he's putting the bills. It's like the Sopranos, you know.
Right.
You find out your dad kills people for a living, but you know that's what puts food on the table.
Yeah, he's doing it for us,
and
that makes him a good guy.
And that makes him a good guy, and you know they've got that whole thing going right now. But you know something, no matter how much you try to steal oil, gas, all that stuff is essentially a finite resource. And if you're going to be, you know, taking it, you need to, at the very least, be trying to find alternatives to it for the day when it does run out. Yeah, it's not going to run out next week. It may not run out next
week. Yeah, but, Joe, you know, junkies don't worry about when the junk is gone. They don't worry about the day that they're going to have to get straight. Sure. They worry about the day that they have to wait a couple before they get another fix.
Sure. Sure.
And that, you know, that's kind of where we are. We are junkies on an international scale.
And you see a little bit of panic just when the gas goes up, you know, a dollar or so.
I got a call this afternoon. Hey, Bob, gas just went up a dime. You know, how the hell did gas just go up a dime, Joe? I read a story yesterday where February futures are, you know, have fallen off by a dramatic amount. They should not be going up.
And you know something? As much as we pay for gas here, anybody who's ever been to Europe or Japan or any place other than the Middle East or America, you know that we're paying nothing for gas compared to what they're paying.
Absolutely.
They pay, you know, when I was in Japan in 1985-86, they were charging like $1 a liter, which is like $4 a gallon, which is an unbelievable amount of money.
Yeah.
And now they're probably paying like $8 or $9 a gallon. And, you know, how they combat that is that in Europe and Japan, they actually have decent rail systems throughout the country, and that they discourage people from driving. I know in Japan it takes like 3 years to get a driver's license, and you have to drive smaller cars, and you don't have these big, you know, you can't.
Yeah, it costs upwards of $1,500 to get a driver's license in Germany.
Yeah.
And, you know, God knows, no one loves the automobile like the Germans do.
Yeah.
And they take it seriously, and but again, it's an infrastructure thing. We have screwed ourselves, Joe. You know, we don't the corner tavern, the corner grocer, the corner anything doesn't exist in America anymore.
No, everything is big corp. I mean, it's funny. A friend of mine came down to visit from Canada over Christmas, and we went to. There's a couple of areas here in Atlanta where they're trying to build these kind of, I call them cities within cities. A place called Atlantic Station, which is just on 17th Street on the other side of the highway, and they got all. It's like an outdoor mall basically, but you have areas there, lofts where you can live as
yeah.
well. And first of all, all the stores are the same corporate schlock you see in any mall. Okay, I mean
yeah.
there's your Old Navy, and there's a Target, and there's
Gap,
and you know, and all that. Well, Old Navy is owned by Gap. I didn't realize that.
No, I didn't. Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, they're it's all one company there. But it's all basically the same. There's no local stores. There's no store in there that has any kind of local flavor.
Right.
And also, all of the lofts and stuff that they have there, all of them that I saw were all like condos. Nobody who works in any of those stores could live in those lofts. They can afford to pay the rents there. And to me, that's just wrong. I mean, I don't have a problem with high-rent areas. I mean, people want to buy a nicer house. They should be able to buy a nicer house if
sure.
they have the money and all that stuff. But if you want to build a community, you have to have areas where people who don't have the big technical skills, who are just, you know, basically service people who work in the burger joints and who work, like me, part-time at pizza places where they can afford to pay rent and live. And they don't have to live luxuriously.
But see, that's the trick, Joe. They want the community, but they don't want you.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And what's funny is that all these lofts and stuff that they're building, the only people who can conceivably afford it are the people who currently live out in the suburbs. And you know what? They're not going to want to come downtown to live near those other
people. But it's the reverse vision of the ghetto. These are, whether it's the walled community that they want to build on the rim of the New River Gorge here in West Virginia, or what you're describing in Atlanta, it's a reverse idea of the ghetto. It's a place where our betters are going to be gathered and protected against the rabble.
Kind of like a gated community.
Yeah, because you talk about Atlanta. You know, I spent a few years there, and I used to adore Virginia Highlands. You know, it was a wonder. You know, you had real little non-corporate schlock shops, great restaurants, older neighborhoods where you could buy a fixer upper, and you know, boom, it was gone, and you know, there was no way to afford getting in there. You there, Joe?
I know.
Yeah.
I know exactly. And Little Five Points is the same way.
Oh, I loved Little Five Points.
Yeah, but it's getting more and more corporate, and they're starting to build these little areas. Atlantic Station was one, Reynolds Town is another, and it's all just, you walk into a Target or a Walmart anywhere, just put yourself in the middle, okay?
Yeah.
Now, imagine you had a Star Trek transport, and you could transport yourself to the middle of any Target or any Walmart in the country. Wherever you went, could you tell where you were?
No.
You absolutely couldn't. The same thing with any mall. You can plop yourself in the middle of any mall.
The only thing that will tell you any difference is the sports memorabilia gear.
Even that in some cases. Even that sometimes, because they'll sell
everybody.
Yeah, well, certain stars are popular. So, you know, you can go to Milwaukee and find a LeBron James NBA jersey.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, but for the most part, yeah, I agree with you that there'll probably be more for the local teams, but still, for the most part, you couldn't tell if you plop yourself in any mall.
Well, you know, you build your transport from McDonald's to McDonald's to McDonald's to McDonald's.
And I remember growing up in New York City, I used to live on Hart Street between Knickerbocker and Wilson. And you can go up Knickerbocker Avenue, and there were dozens of little shops. It's still that way up in New York. My niece lives off of Fresh Pond Road in Queens. And you can go down Fresh Pond Road towards Myrtle Avenue, and you've got all these little shops all over the place. There's no corporate stuff anywhere. I mean, there may be a couple of, you know, they look like larger department store type of deals, but, you know, there's no Macy's and there's no Gimbel. That stuff is all downtown. Here it's all these little places, and they really take texture. When I lived in Italy, there was almost no corporate presence at all.
Right.
And it's all little shops, and you know what? The food was fantastic.
Yeah.
The goods and the people there were friendly unless you were rude to them. You know, you tried to speak their language, even though you spoke it badly. You make the attempt, just like we expect people to make the attempt to speak English here.
Yeah.
You know, and they just have a consensus there to take care of the smaller people. And we just don't do that here. And that's a real shame of it. And, you know, it's corporate power, and it's a combination of so many other things. And, you know, again, I can go back to historical stuff, but I don't even want to waste my time with that anymore. We've got to fight these. We've got to break the cycle of history.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? We've got to break that cycle. And, you know, you talk about Democrats needing a message. I say our message ought to be global. And I realize people talk about the global stuff as a bad thing, but you know what? If you do it right, it can be a good thing. Because you know something? It's coming whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
We already live in a global economy. But we have to band together to make sure that the political control and, to a certain extent, the financial control remains in the hands of the citizens of the world. I want the same kind of benefits and salary for the people in Bangladesh as I want for them here. If the New Deal failed anywhere, that's where it failed, because it stuck to America and America alone.
Well, right. And you know, the fundamental theory that underlies these free trade agreements is probably, to a certain extent, sound in that, but it won't work until the playing field is level, until the earth is flat, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, if a company wants to do business in another country, I don't have a problem with that so long as they're doing it for the right reasons. In other words, if Mercedes wants to build cars here in America because it's cheaper to build a plant here in America and you know, get it out to Americans here, that's fine. That's all well and good. But I don't want them moving to America just because, you know, we've got cheaper labor here. And I don't want them moving to Vietnam or something just because they got cheaper labor. I don't want them just shipping around finding.
Yeah, if you want to build your plant in Mexico because you get a better quality of work from a Mexican worker, you know what? That's America. That's the problem of the American worker, Joe.
Right.
That's not, you know, and that's something we can correct.
And what was it, was it Honda that decided not to go to Alabama?
Toyota bypassed Toyota. America.
Yeah, and they
went to Canada.
And because, part of that was healthcare.
Yeah, they weren't going to eat up they weren't going to be burdened with the healthcare nightmare.
And there was also a part of it was that the workers in Alabama weren't anywhere near the skill that they needed.
Right.
That was part of it. It wasn't the totality of it. Because you know something? I meet a lot of Southerners and they're very, very intelligent people. Don't let people up in the North who listen to the show, don't let anybody fool you to think that Southerners are stupid, because they're not stupid. They're just saddled by their history. They grew up in a medieval agrarian society.
And we may talk slow, but while we're talking slow, we're figuring out how we're going to beat you out of something.
Sure. And look at this. You know that the two of the smartest presidents I ever saw were Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, I may not have thought much of Jimmy Carter as president, but he's a wonderful person, very smart. And Bill Clinton was one of the smartest SOBs I've ever seen in office.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy who could memorize his speeches and who could answer questions. And I always love how he would take a second to think before he answered,
yeah,
instead of just spilling out.
And he probably learned that in speech class in fourth grade, Joe.
And, you know, and then just applied it. And, of course, George Bush never made it past fourth grade. And so
I set him up, you knock him down.
Exactly.
Hey, Joe, what a great conversation.
Yeah, great talking to you, Bob.
Thank you so very much. Have yourself a happy new year, and think of me when you're doing that soup, man. That sounds great.
I will do that. And, you know, if we ever get a chance to get together, I'll make some for you, or I'll give you some of my stock.
All right, sounds great. Take care.
Bob.
Bye now. That is conversation radio. That's exactly what we're going for here. Spend an hour, spend a minute. Because you know what? The people who listen to liberal and progressive talk radio are generally smarter than just about anybody you could see opining on the likes of Fox. You know what I mean? That was a level of punditry and opinion and analysis you're not going to get from most of the well-heeled silk stocking bunch that holds themselves out as experts. That's it for tonight. My lovely wife Agnes produced the show and did a wonderful job in doing it. The show was announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerbway engineered our studio. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream and maintains the archives of this and many other wonderful liberal programs, having served out more than 5 million hours of progressive talk now. That's doing something. So if you've got a little something extra, remember Ben, because he never sends a bill. And a reminder, our good friend Bruce Birch with All Things Reconsidered coming up at 10 o'clock. AllThingsReconsidered.org. Go there and listen. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And as this old year